Chapter 6 The Three Golden Hares. Once upon a time, a duke returned home from a hunt in a magnificent wood. In his great hall, the lords and ladies of his manor awaited him. Every year, the duke brought back a great bounty from his hunt, and the lords and ladies would ooh and ah, and then be treated to a feast. There was much excitement when the duke finally entered the hall. The lords and ladies cheered, and he bowed and waved and shook hands all around. Trumpets were sounded, and the huntsmen began to file in. But the first huntsman carried nothing. The lords and ladies wondered at this, but the duke smiled serenely. The second huntsman carried nothing. Still the duke smiled. The third, nothing. The fourth, nothing. The lords and ladies began to wonder if this was some kind of joke. One lord even ventured to laugh, but the duke turned an eye of such withering scorn on him that the laughter immediately ceased, and the laughing lord later sold all of his belongings and moved to a neighboring kingdom. Finally, there were 20 huntsmen in the great hall, and not one of them carried a dead animal of any kind. The duke turned to his audience. "Ladies and gentlemen," he said, and he meant this quite literally, "I present to you the worst hunt, and the best, that I have ever had. The fewest creatures, but the rarest prize." In came 2 huntsmen. Between them they carried a pole. Hanging from that pole was the strangest, most grotesque beast that anyone had ever laid eyes on. It looked like something halfway between a wolf and a man, a bear and a boy. Ladies screamed, lords cried aloud, a servant fainted dead away. The huntsman cut the dead creature down from its pole. 2 huntsmen approached it with gleaming knives as the duke looked on proudly. They would take off the beast's hide and head and mount both on the duke's wall. Warning, this next bit is kind of gross. The huntsmen dug their knives into the beast's skin just below the jaw and began to run their blades between the fur and the flesh. Their hunting knives shone red as clumps of meat and animal hair stuck to their blades. The lords and ladies watched with disgusted amusement. The duke giggled with glee. Who else would have the hide and head of such a monster? Soon the huntsmen skinning the beast began to gape. One sprang back from the creature, muttering, "It isn't right, it isn't holy." Another huntsman stepped in for him, but soon he fell away too, crying that there was something terrible and natural about the beast. Finally, the task was left to one huntsman alone, a grizzled old man who bared his teeth and steadily, carefully finished the skinning. He stepped back from the carcass so that all could see it before he cut off its head. Gasps echoed through the hall. For beneath that beastly skin was another layer of skin, human skin. And beneath that beastly form was another form, a human form. The blood-soaked form of a boy. Carefully, the grizzled huntsman returned to take off the beastly head. He sliced into the skin, but instead of severing the neck, he gently peeled away the top layer of hide and fur. After a few minutes' work, he stepped back again. In the middle of the floor of a great castle's great hall, there lay a naked, blood-stained boy. "I will cut no more," the huntsman said. "He's breathing." After the commotion and hubbub had died down, and a doctor had come and gone, and the duke had bragged to one and all that not only was he the only hunter to ever kill a beast boy, but that he was also the only hunter ever not to kill one, which left more than a few people scratching their heads. The question arose of who would take the bloody, unconscious boy home. A lord and lady who had never had any children of their own soon volunteered, and the boy was moved to their manor and cared for as well as a boy can be. When, after a few days, the boy finally woke up, he informed them that his name was Hansel. Hansel was comfortable in the rich, sprawling manor with a lord and lady for parents, but he was not happy. Not a moment passed when he did not wonder what had become of Gretel. He felt ashamed at how he acted in the wood of life. She had been so good to him, and he had been selfish and irresponsible. It made him sick to think of it. He could not sleep for his shame. Each restless, sweaty night he lay awake, staring into the darkness. Then, in the morning, he would rise and wander through the manor like a ghost. Where was Gretel? What had happened to her? He feared it was something terrible. And if so, it was all his fault. He wanted to scream. How could she ever forgive him? It was like a private hell of his own thoughts, and he knew no way of escaping it. And then, one night, as he lay in bed and tossed and turned in sweat, he thought, "I will never do anything like that ever again. I will find Gretel and make things right with her. I will be responsible. I will be good. I swear it." and because he wanted it so, so badly, he was, and he felt better. Wait, don't tell me, dear readers. This sounds implausible to you. Of course it does. Having never experienced such a thing yourself, it naturally sounds ludicrous. He wished to be good, and so he was, just like that? Yes, just like that. There is a certain kind of pain that can change you. Even the strongest sword, when placed in a raging fire, will soften and bend and change its form. So it was with Hansel. The fire of guilt and shame was just that hot. Trust me on this one. I know this from personal experience. I hope that you never will, but since you are a person and therefore prone to making horrible, soul-splitting mistakes, you probably will one day know what this kind of guilt and shame feels like. And when that time comes, I hope you have the strength, as Hansel had, to take advantage of the fire and reshape your own sword. Once Hansel had sworn to be good, his life was quite bearable. The lord and lady were fine parents. They cared for Hansel and spoke kindly to him and fed him good food. They had a wonderful library, and Hansel enjoyed sitting in it, reading books about knights and damsels, dragons and giants. He knew he couldn't stay in the manor forever, for he needed to find Gretel. But until he regained his strength, he was very happy to stay with these new grown-ups. There seemed to be nothing wrong with them. Ah, it makes me sad to even say it. Is there ever nothing wrong with grown-ups? Certainly not in these stories. Maybe in real life, there are perfect parents and amazing adults who will never, ever disappoint you. But once upon a time, no grown-up was perfect. You, my dear reader, have certainly learned that by now. The lord and lady were not perfect either, of course. Sometimes the lady had a short temper. Usually the lord had bad breath. But worse than these things was that the lord had a secret he kept from even his wife. It wasn't a terrible secret, nothing cruel or evil. It was a secret weakness, one that, try as he might, he could not control. The lord loved to gamble. He lived every day without giving it into his weakness, but at night a cold sweat gripped him, and he could not help taking his and his wife's gold from their chest and creeping down to the back room of an alehouse in town and wagering on cards. Sometimes he won. Usually he lost, but never yet had he lost so much that his wife noticed the difference in the morning. But one night a stranger joined the game. His skin looked almost red in the dim light of the tavern's back room, and his beard was cut into a point below his chin. He bet with the lord, and he won. He won and won and won again. The lord knew he should go home, for his money was gone. But he knew that if he went home having lost all their gold, his wife would discover his secret failing. He was ashamed. He asked the bearded stranger if he could win his money back. The stranger said that he could, if he would wager whatever stood before the fire in his library that night. The man could think of nothing that stood before the fire in his library except for his fine mahogany stool. It was a small price to pay for the chance to win all his money back, so he agreed. The lord lost. He returned home in despair. He walked into the library where the fire burned, wondering if there was some way to hide the loss of all that gold and the stool from his wife. But as his eyes fell on the stool before the fire, he saw Hansel sitting on it, reading a book. The lord thought back to the gambling stranger, to his reddish skin, his pointed beard, and his strange wager. Knowledge smacked the lord over the head like a tray of sausages. He staggered and fell to the ground. Hansel rushed to his side. "Gambling," the lord said. "Are you all right?" Hansel asked. The lord's face was pale and his eyes stared up at the ceiling blankly. "I was gambling with the devil." The next morning they waited for the devil to come and collect his due. The lord wrung his hands and apologized to Hansel over and over as the lady buried her face in her kerchief and wept. But Hansel just stood there, nervous and numb. It was too strange, too incredible to believe. He had been gambled away to the devil? What did that mean? What would he have to do? He wouldn't have to do anything, of course. If you are gambled away to the devil, and this is a matter of public record, I'm certainly not making it up, you are damned to excruciating pain for all eternity. And no matter what you do, no matter how good you are, or how many times you ask, "Please, pretty please, with a cherry on top," the devil will never, ever, ever let you out. It's excruciating pain from the moment you arrive in hell until the moment after eternity. But Hansel did not know that, which, for the moment, was probably best. After a time, the devil arrived at the manor. He wore a walking coat and carried a cane and had tiny spectacles that sat on the end of his nose. and his hair looked like 100,000 strands of shining gold. He approached Hansel and frowned. "He's a bit pure, isn't he?" the devil said and sniffed. "He smells good." Hansel swallowed hard. "Oh, he's very good, yes," the Lord said. "Too good to go to hell." "Would you rather go?" the devil said swiftly, turning on the Lord. "Oh, no, no," the Lord said. "No, take him." The devil smiled and muttered to himself. "You'll be there shortly, anyway." "What?" the Lord said. "Nothing." The devil turned to Hansel. "Well, you're so good and so pure, it makes me sick. I can't touch you, and I wouldn't want to, anyway. It'd take me weeks to get the stench of you off me. So report to the gates of hell in 3 days' time." Hansel gathered his courage and said, "What will happen to me in hell?" "I love it when they ask that," the devil said, smiling. "You'll be in excruciating pain for all eternity, and no matter what you do, no matter how good you are, or how many times you ask, please, pretty please, with a cherry on top, I will never, ever, ever let you out. It's excruciating pain from the moment you arrive until the moment after eternity." "Well, the cat's out of the bag now." He came very close to Hansel, and Hansel could feel the heat of the devil's skin. "And if you are not at the gates of hell in 3 days' time, I'll flood the whole valley with fire, and everyone in it will die. And then I'll find your soul, of course, and take my due." Now Hansel wanted to cry, but he held his breath, stuck out his chin, and said in his bravest voice, "I'll be there." And the devil said, "I know." And then he turned for the door, waved a single pinky at the Lord, and was gone. In a forest near the Lord's manor there wandered a very old man. He had a long nose, a bent back, and lips that puckered around a toothless mouth. He was searching for two children, a boy and a girl who had been long lost a long time ago. He was about to sit and rest his aching bones beneath the branches of a comfortable-looking tree when, from a distance, he heard the sound of someone crying. He followed the sound to the foot of a great elm, where he found a boy cradling his head in his hands. The old man felt pity for the poor boy, so he comforted him and asked him if he needed help. "No one can help me," the boy moaned. "I must travel to the gates of hell in 3 days' time and deliver myself to the devil, to be in excruciating pain until the moment after eternity." "Hansel," the old man said. The boy looked up. "How do you know my name?" For a moment the old man said nothing. He just stared at the boy's head of curly black hair and round eyes, dark as charcoal. Then he said, "Never mind, I thought you were someone else." He sat down beside Hansel gingerly and frowned. "So," he said, "you must go to hell." Hansel sniffled hard, wiped the tears from his face with the back of his sleeve, and began to tell the old man why. When he finished, the man was staring at him intently. "It's not a lost cause, my boy. Nearly, but not completely." He stopped. "Yes?" Hansel asked. "Well," the old man said, "it is said that in hell the devil can have no power over one who has three of his golden hairs." Hansel thought back to the bespectacled devil with the thin strands of gold on his head. "But how would I get them?" Hansel asked. "That I have no idea, but I can take you to the gates of hell. I know where those are, and I can guide you back if you ever come out." "That's very kind of you," Hansel said, staring into the man's unlovely face. And then he said, "But now can you tell me how you know my name?" The old man didn't answer. Instead, he slowly got to his feet and began to walk. He turned and saw that Hansel was sitting on the ground under the great elm. "Well," the old man said, "do you want to go to hell or not?" They journeyed all day, until, when the sun was low in the sky, they came to a small city, ringed by walls of stone. The old man asked the guard if he and Hansel could stay within the city walls for the night. "No one stays in this city," said the guard, "for our fountain of wine no longer flows, and we are all in mourning." And he told them of the magical fountain that had once given wine without cease until one day it didn't. "Devil knows why," the soldier said, throwing up his hands. The old man was about to turn away from the city gate when Hansel said, "I'm going to see the devil in hell. Perhaps I can ask him why, and if I ever escape I will come back and tell you." The soldier scratched his head. "I didn't mean the devil literally knows why. It's an expression."
"It is?" Hansel replied.
"Oh, what does it mean?"
"It means," the soldier began, but stopped.
"Wait, are you really going to hell?"
Hansel nodded, and so did the old man. The guard stared at the little boy.
"Never mind. Just come in."
The next day, the old man and Hansel walked into the sun was low in the sky, and again they found themselves at the gate of a city with walls of stone. Again, the old man asked the guard if he and Hansel could stay, but the guard said, "No one stays in this city, for our tree of golden apples is now barren, and we are all in mourning." And he told them of a magical tree that had once given golden apples without cease, until one day it didn't. "Devil knows why," the soldier said, throwing up his hands. So Hansel said, "I'm going to see the devil in hell. Perhaps I can ask him why, and if I ever escape, I will come back and tell you." The soldier scratched his head. "I didn't mean the devil literally knows why. It's an expression. People keep saying that," Hansel replied. "What does it mean?" "It means," the soldier began, but stopped. "Wait, are you really going to hell?" Hansel nodded, and so did the old man. The guard stared at the little boy. "Never mind, just come in." On the third day, the man and Hansel walked until, when the sun was low in the sky, they came to a river that could only be crossed by ferry, but the ferryman refused to take them over. "I've been in this ferry for 7 years, and I can't get out," the ferryman said. "I'm sick to death of it. My arms are exhausted. I haven't slept well in ages. I don't even want to hear about going to the bathroom." "Why can't you get out?" the old man asked. "Devil knows why," the ferryman said, throwing up his hands. So Hansel said, "I'm going to see the devil in hell. Perhaps I can ask him why, and if I ever escape, I will come back and tell you." "I didn't mean the devil literally. Wait, did you say you're going to hell?" the ferryman asked. "But why?" "The devil knows," Hansel replied. The ferryman scratched his head at that. But then he said, "Well, if you promise to come back and tell me why I'm stuck here, I'd be happy to take you over." And so he did. At last, as the sun was disappearing beyond the edge of the horizon on the third day, the old man and Hansel arrived at the tall black doors of hell. Hansel's knees began to knock gently against each other. The doors to hell led directly underground, and there was no handle or knocker. They were just smooth and black, like eternity. "Be brave," the old man said, "and get those 3 golden hairs." Hansel said, "I will," but he wasn't sure he believed it. Hansel's hand was trembling so badly it took him 3 times just to knock on the great doors. But as soon as his knuckles hit them, they swung open, and 2 pairs of long red arms grabbed him and thrust him inside. The door slammed shut behind him. Faithful Johannes sat down on the ground to wait. He wondered how long eternity was. Hansel stood just inside Hal's door, staring all around him. He was in what looked like a cave. It had a low, heavy ceiling hung with long spires of rock. Down those spires dripped red liquid that looked for all the world like blood. But though there was a ceiling, there were no walls. Hansel could see forever in every direction. 1,000 paths stretched out from where he stood, paths that wound past millions upon millions of craters of bubbling, boiling liquid fire. In each crater, a sinner screamed as red-armed demons drove him under the liquid fire's surface. The sinners kicked and struggled as they were held below. Sometimes the demons would allow them to rise, and the sinners would scream and cry and say that they were sorry and please let them out, please, pretty please, with a cherry on top. And then the demons would push them down again to suffocate and be burned. "Look fun," said one of Hansel's 2 demon guides. Then he led Hansel between the pits of fire, over a path that glowed like embers. The soles of Hansel's feet began to scorch, and he hopped from foot to foot and winced. But far worse than the pain in his feet was a chorus of screaming sinners bursting forth from the pits and then being shoved back down again like hellish jack-in-the-boxes. As they passed one crater, a heavy-set woman burst from beneath the bubbling fire and screamed, "Oh, pretty please, stop!" Hansel stared at her. It was the baker woman. She saw him too. "Hansel," she cried, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Tell them to stop. Please tell them to stop. Please, pretty please." A demon with a pitchfork shoved her back under the surface of the boiling fire. Hansel slowed beside the pit. He hated the baker woman. She was bad. He was glad she was being punished for what she'd done to them and to all the children she must have eaten before they met her. "Yes," he thought as she watched her bob to the surface again, scream and then plunge back into the torture below. "Yes, punish her." But when she came up again, he saw the fear in her face and the remorse and the pleading. She deserved to be punished, but not like this, and not for eternity. "Would you please stop?" Hansel said. The demon with the pitchfork turned to Hansel. "What?" he hissed. Hansel swallowed hard. He held his head high. He stared straight into the demon's eyes. "Please," he said, "I've forgiven her. Stop punishing her now." For a moment, the demon looked paralyzed. Then he glanced at Hansel's demon guides. The corners of his mouth broke into a smile, and he said, "Nice try, kid, but it doesn't work like that." The 2 demons laughed and pushed Hansel on. His eyes scanned the pits, looking for the empty one that he knew somewhere awaited him. Up ahead, he noticed someone in one of the pits who, for some reason, caught his attention. It was a young man with black hair and striking green eyes. He wailed and howled each time his face rose above the boiling pit. Hansel looked away. Finally, they arrived at an empty one. Hansel stood at the edge, looking down into the boiling fire rimmed with black, jagged rock. Have you ever stood at the edge of water and known that it was going to be really, really cold? And you knew you had to go in, but you really, really, really didn't want to. Well, this was kind of like that, but with liquid fire instead. Hansel clenched his lips and clasped his sweaty hands together. He closed his eyes. Behind him, he heard the demons chuckling. And then, before they could push him or kick him or strike him with the pitchfork, Hansel jumped in. Pain. Greater pain than he could ever have imagined. Burning, so terrible and unnatural that every inch of Hansel's body screamed to get out of the fire. He began to kick frantically, struggling to get the surface. Finally, he rose above the flames, and there was a split second of relief if perhaps the pain was coming to an end. But instantly he felt the sting of pitchforks on his neck and his face, thrusting him back under. He went down again and burned, and the burn was worse this time for having felt, just for an instant, the sweet cooling relief of the surface. Once more, Hansel struggled up and clear of the flames. He was just about to loose the most lung-cracking scream he had ever produced when he heard one of the demons say, "Give him a minute this time. I like to hear them scream." Just as the sound pushed past Hansel's throat and over his tongue, he clamped his lips shut. He looked into the demon's narrow, stupid, vicious eyes. And he thought, "For you, I won't." After a moment of the sweetest relief imaginable, they pushed him under again, and he was certain his skin was burning off. He kicked up to the surface. The demons looked at him expectantly. But instead of screaming, Hansel concentrated on the howls of the other sufferers. "I'm sorry. I hate myself for what I did. If only I had been good." "Why isn't this one screaming?" the demon said as they shoved him back under the wicked fire. When he was under again, he realized that, while this was terrible, it wasn't as terrible as all those sleepless nights when he had felt so guilty about abandoning Gretel. At least this was just pain, and not shame and guilt. This was not his fault. He rose to the surface again, and he smiled at the demon. "This one's defective," the demon shrieked, and they pushed him back under. Down and back up, and Hansel smiled. Down and back up, and Hansel smiled. Down and back up, and the demons were pulling him out of the pit. "What's wrong with this one?" one of them said, and poked him with a pitchfork. Hansel winced, but did not make a sound. "Better take him to the devil himself," the other demon said. "See what's to be done." So they took him down another burning path. Hansel's brief sense of triumph was swallowed like a coin slipping into the great dark maw of a well. The devil himself. Soon they came to a place where the pits of fire ended, and there began what looked like a quiet residential neighborhood. They turned onto a wide street, with grass and trees and bushes, but red grass and black trees and red bushes, until they came to a little house with a black picket fence and red walls and black shutters. The demons pushed Hansel to the door. "Go see him," they said. "See if you don't scream then." They turned away. "I hope we get a screamer next time," one said. "Yeah," said the other. "That was freaky." Hansel stood before the door. It was black, like the gates of hell. But it was quaint, too, with a knocker that looked like the bronze head of a kitten. Hansel looked at the knocker more closely. The whiskers were real. It was the bronzed head of a kitten. Avoiding the knocker, Hansel rapped very quietly on the door. No one answered. Cautiously, he leaned his head against it and listened. Screams, terrible screams, much worse than even those the sinners in the pits of fire made, echoed from inside. Hansel's blood shivered in his veins. "Do it," he told himself. "Do it now." He put his hand on the doorknob and turned it. Hansel felt himself in the living room, sort of like a normal living room. It had a couch before a fire, a wingback armchair, side tables, candles to read by, and a thick rug. But it stank of sweat and body odor and sulfur all mixed together. It stank so much that Hansel nearly gagged and was forced to hold his nose and cover his mouth. He looked more closely at the wingback chair. It wasn't leather. It was human skin. Hansel could see teeth sticking out from one of the seams. He clamped his hand over his mouth more tightly to prevent himself from throwing up. The screams were coming from the adjoining room. Carefully, Hansel crept up to the edge of the couch. It was made of hair, human hair. He tried not to think about it. Hidden behind the couch, he could see into the next room. It was a kitchen. In it, he saw an old devil woman, with a pot and a pan in each hand, cooking and singing. Not screaming. That noise was singing. Just then, Hansel heard the creaking sound of footsteps on the stairs that led up to the front door. He looked around frantically for a place to hide. His eyes fell on a closet. He ran to it and slipped inside, closing the door quietly behind him. Just then, he heard the devil's voice. "Grandmother, I'm home!" The screaming, singing in the kitchen stopped. "Dinner's ready, my dear!" And now Hansel could hear the sound of a table being set. The devil helped set the table, for even the devil helps his grandmother set the table. He stopped and sniffed the air. Do I smell human flesh?" he asked. Hansel caught his breath. "Of course, silly," his grandmother said. "There's a little boy named Hansel waiting for you in the closet in the living room." "No, she didn't say that. I was just teasing you." "Of course, silly," his grandmother actually said. "What do you think we're having for dinner?" And they sat down and ate. Hansel sat in the dark of the closet, surrounded by extra blankets and pillows. He refused to look at what they were made of, and waited. The devil ate the supper that his grandmother had made for him, the fingers of sinners spiced with their guilty tears, and then he yawned loudly. "Tired from all your wicked trickery," his grandmother said indulgently. "Come and lie down. You can put your head in my lap, and I'll stroke your beautiful golden hair." The devil removed his long traveling coat, took off his spectacles and laid them on a side table, and curled up on the rug in the center of the living room, laying his head on his grandmother's lap. She gently stroked his hair. "Sleep now," she said. "Sleep." Soon he was snoring. After a little while, the grandmother was too. Hansel sat there in the dark closet listening to them snore. Suddenly he realized this was his chance. Hadn't the old man said that it only required 3 golden hairs from the devil's head to escape this place? Carefully, he opened the door of the closet and tipped over to where the devil was sleeping. Ever so gingerly, Hansel reached out and took a golden hair from the devil's head. That's what he was going to take, right? Right? Wrong! Are you crazy? The devil would wake up immediately, and then it would be all over for Hansel forever and ever and ever. I hope that's not what you thought Hansel was going to do. If you did, good luck if you ever end up in hell. Hansel reached out and took the devil's spectacles from the side table, retreated with them to the closet, and closed the door again. Then he waited there all night. The next morning, the devil arose and readied himself for another day of soul collecting. His grandmother made him a breakfast of human fingernails, scrambled, of course, and packed up his lunch in a bag. But before he left, the devil announced that he could not find his glasses. He was furious because he could barely see without them. "I hardly recognize you, grandmother," he shouted. "Where in hell did I put them?" "Devil knows," his grandmother said. "No, he doesn't," he shouted. Eventually, he stormed out of the house without his glasses, grumbling about telling one sinner from another and wasting a perfectly good day of damnation. After he was gone, the grandmother went upstairs. Hansel ever so carefully opened the door to the closet. He peered up the stairs. The grandmother was carrying things to the attic. Hansel watched her carry an armload of objects up the stairs, including a crown with a head still attached to it, and something that looked like a squid, and came back down empty-handed. She did it again, this time carrying 2 giant feet. When she came down, she was sweating from the heat and strain. She itched her gray hair and then took it off. Hansel grimaced at the scabby, bald head underneath. She disappeared into a room and reemerged without her hair at all, carrying instead a taxidermied child with a lollipop in his nose. As she turned for the attic, Hansel took a deep breath and followed her up. Each of his steps on the stairs made a loud creak, causing him to wince and suck in his breath. But the devil's grandmother was singing again, and she couldn't hear a thing. When she disappeared through the door of an attic, Hansel hurried up after her. She was half buried in boxes and strange objects when he quietly shut the door behind her. To his amazement, relief, and glee, there was a key in the attic door. He turned it in the lock and went back downstairs. Hansel soon heard frantic banging on the attic door. Then the grandmother began shouting for help, but no one was around to hear. After a lot of banging and shouting, the grandmother seemed to resign herself to a day in the attic, and she quieted down. Now Hansel made his way into her bedroom. On the dresser before an obsidian mirror stood a wig stand, with the grandmother's gray wig on it. Around it was her makeup, thick black lipstick that looked like a petrified oil slick, and blush that looked like dried powdered blood, and fake eyelashes that looked like, no, were, the legs of flies. In the closet were her dresses. Hansel closed the door to her room. He came out an hour later, dressed from head to foot like the devil's grandmother. He wore a billowing black dress, makeup all over his face. He had put it on as best he could, which wasn't very well. And her gray wig. He'd skipped the eyelashes. In the kitchen, Hansel took what looked to be a pot of human fingers out of the icebox. He put the pot on the stove and turned on the heat. Leftovers, he said to himself. Then he set the table with forks and knives made of human bone and teeth, and he waited for the devil to get home. When he heard the devil's footsteps trudging up to the door, Hansel began to scream at the top of his lungs. The door opened and the devil came in. "Damn it, grandmother! Can you stop your infernal singing for one bloody instant?" "Someone's in a bad mood today," Hansel said in his best grandmother voice. "Without my blasted glasses, there isn't any point looking for sinners. I've made a complete fool of myself," the devil said sullenly. "Oh, I'm sure you didn't, dear," Hansel said, and he began to ladle the fingers into the devil's plate. "Your voice sounds strange today, grandmother," the devil said. "Are you well?" A cold sweat broke out all over Hansel's skin. "Of course, dear," he said, "just a little sniffle," and he sniffled twice. The devil sat down at the table, but immediately turned on Hansel. "I tell you, it stinks of human flesh in here. It's disgusting." But Hansel remembered what the grandmother had said the day before. "Of course it does. What do you think we're having for dinner?" The devil took one bite of his dinner and spit it out. "This is revolting. What is it?" "Leftovers," Hansel said nervously. "Ugh, I hate leftovers." The devil stood up and stomped into the living room and plopped down on the couch. "What a horrible day," he shouted. Hansel took a deep breath and then slowly walked into the living room. "Here, dear," he said, "let me stroke your hair. Everything will be better in the morning." And Hansel sat down in the middle of the living room rug, just as the devil's grandmother had done. The devil grumbled and laid his head in Hansel's lap. "Grandmother, why are you shaking?" "The better to rock you to sleep, my dear," Hansel said, and he tried to prevent his teeth from chattering too. "Grandmother, will you sing to me?" the devil asked, his eyelids fluttering closed. "Certainly, my dear," Hansel said. He swallowed hard, and then he began to scream at the top of his lungs. "Grandmother, what a beautiful voice you have," the devil said. "The better to sing you to sleep, my dear," Hansel replied. "Can you stroke my hair?" the devil said. With trembling hands, Hansel began to stroke his hair. "Grandmother, what delicate fingers you have," the devil said. "Shh," Hansel whispered. "Sleep, my dear." And the devil slept. As soon as the devil's breathing was nice and even, Hansel took one of the devil's golden hairs between two of his fingers and, trying not to wake him, plucked it out. "Tar and pitch!" screamed the devil, sitting up. "Why did you do that?" Hansel's heart had jumped into his mouth, but he said as calmly as he could, "I'm sorry, I fell asleep and had a bad dream. I must have grabbed hold of your hair." The devil settled himself back in Hansel's lap. "I love bad dreams," he said. "What was it?" Hansel swallowed. "I dreamed that there was a city with a fountain of wine, but that it flowed no longer, and all the people were sad." "Aha! Those old fools," said the devil. "I placed a frog right under the mountain. That's what's stopping up all the wine. All they've got to do is kill it, but they don't know that, of course." He chuckled at the unhappiness he had caused and fell back to sleep. As soon as the devil's breathing was nice and even again, Hansel took another golden hair between his fingers and plucked it out. "Sulfur and brimstone!" screamed the devil, sitting up. "Why did you do that?" "I'm sorry," Hansel said. "I fell asleep and had a bad dream again. I must have grabbed hold of your hair." The devil settled himself back in Hansel's lap. "Well," he said, "what was it this time?" "This time I dreamed there was a city with a tree that gave golden apples. But the tree was dying, and it would give apples no more, and all the people were sad." "Aha, those old fools," said the devil. "I placed a mouse under the ground at the root of the tree. It's nibbling at the roots and killing it. If they just took the mouse out and did away with it, the tree would produce golden apples again. But they don't know that, of course." He chuckled at all the misery he had caused and closed his eyes again. Again, Hansel waited until the devil's breathing was nice and even, and a third time he plucked out a golden hair. "Father above and me below," screamed the devil, sitting up. "Don't tell me. You had another bad dream." "Yes," Hansel said. "I'm so sorry." The devil settled himself back in Hansel's lap. "I'm getting sick of this," he said. "Tell me the dream, but if you pull out my hair again, I'll put you out there with the sinners."
"I dreamed there was a poor ferryman," Hansel said, "who had been in his boat for 7 years and couldn't leave, no matter how hard he tried."
"The old fool," said the devil. "All he has to do is hand his paddle off to someone else, and he'll be free, and they'll be stuck there for the rest of time. But he doesn't know that, of course." He chuckled at the agony he had caused, and said, "Now, don't wake me again, or you'll be sorry."
He was just settling into a nice, peaceful sleep, with Hansel holding the 3 golden hairs in his hand and shaking like a leaf, when a scream pierced the house. The devil sat up. "What in hell was that?" he shouted.
"It sounds like someone in the attic," Hansel said. "Has one of the sinners escaped?"
"We'll soon find out," the devil cried, and he leaped to his feet and ran up the stairs. As soon as he was out of sight, Hansel jumped up, threw the wig and dress off, and banged out of the door of the house. He turned for the doors of hell and broke into a run, gripping the 3 golden hairs tightly. After a while, he glanced briefly over his shoulder. To his surprise, he discovered that the fire in the pits and the demons with the pitchforks had disappeared. All he saw now were poor sinners, writhing on the floor of a great cave, screaming in sorrow and remorse for all the pain they had caused. Holding the 3 golden hairs, he knew that he was seeing the truth, hell as it really was. He arrived at the great black doors. As he laid his hands on them, they swung open, and he stood blinking in the daylight. The old man, who had been sitting on the ground just outside all this time, leaped to his feet. "You're out," he cried. "Hallelujah." And then he said, "Why are you wearing makeup?" But just at that moment, a terrible cry echoed from the depths of hell, the unmistakable, blood-chilling, hair-raising, stomach-turning cry of the devil. "Run!" Hansel cried. And they did. They sprinted over the dusty ground, away from the black doors of hell. Glancing over his shoulder, Hansel saw the furious devil galloping across the turf behind them. For you see, outside of hell, the devil has no power over those who are not already damned, and so he had to chase them on foot. Still, he was faster than the young boy and the old man. He wasn't far behind them when they arrived at the river. They jumped in the ferryman's boat and shoved it off from shore. "Did you discover how to free me?" the ferryman said.
"I did," Hansel replied, "but take us across first. Look, the devil's after us."
So the ferryman rowed with all his might. When Hansel and the old man got out of the boat, Hansel told the ferryman what to do. The ferryman returned to the other shore where the devil was waiting impatiently. "After those two, now," the devil commanded, hopping in. So the ferryman started off, but he paddled as slowly as he possibly could.
"Hurry!" screamed the devil. "They're getting away!"
But the ferryman said, "I can't go any faster. The current's too strong for me."
"Oh, to hell with that!" the devil cried, and grabbed the paddle from the ferryman's hands. He paddled them across the river in a blink of an eye.
But when they reached the other shore, the ferryman hopped out, and the devil found that he was stuck fast. He bellowed and hollered and screamed and cried, but no amount of protest would set him free. The ferryman then set about making a little sign with some clay and a piece of slate to explain the situation to all who came by so that no one would accidentally free the devil. He adorned it with flowers and smiling angels. The devil fumed, but he was stuck in that boat for many years to come. The old man laughed and laughed to see the devil in the little ferry boat struggling to get out, and Hansel laughed too and wiped the grandmother's makeup from his face. And they began to walk back toward the walled cities to tell the people how to break the devil's curses. But after walking just a little way, the old man stumbled. Hansel caught him, and they began to walk again. But a little while on, he stumbled a second time, and this time he fell to the ground. Hansel tried to help him to his feet, but the old man was breathing hard.
"Let me lie here a moment," he said. The race with the devil had taken its toll on his ancient body.
So Hansel sat beside the man and, because the old man asked him to, told him all about his time in hell and what he had done to escape. The old man laughed when Hansel told him of dressing up like the devil's grandmother, and laughed some more when Hansel described singing the devil to sleep. But soon the old man's laughter became a fit of coughing. He put his head back in the grass and tried to breathe calmly. After a while, he took Hansel's hand.
"I can go no further,"
he said, making the words was an effort for him.
"Stay beside me, Hansel. Don't run from me now."
"Why would I run from you?" Hansel asked.
"You ran from your parents because of me," the old man said.
Hansel didn't know what he was talking about. "I ran away because my father cut off my head," he said. "And how did you know I ran away?"
"Who told them to cut off your head?"
The old man's voice was weak. "A statue," Hansel began. He stopped.
He gazed at the man's ancient, wrinkled face, and then after a moment he said, "You did."
"I did," said faithful Johannes. He tried to raise himself to sit, but his face twisted with pain, and he gave up.
"I have been seeking you and your sister all these years. Now I've found you, and I'm dying."
They sat there, the old man and the young boy, on a patch of grass by the side of the road. The clouds passed overhead. The late autumn sun dipped low in the western sky, and the crickets took up their song. And then, because he thought about it every morning when he woke up, and every evening when he lay down, Hansel said, "Tell me about my parents." Johannes smiled sadly. "They cursed themselves, Hansel, for what they did to you too. They were foolish.
Foolish!"
He coughed angrily.
"They see their foolishness now, and so do I. Faithfulness is important. Understanding is important, but nothing is as precious as children. Nothing."
The cricket song enveloped them once again. A flock of swallows swooped overhead, their little brown bodies framed by the pink sky. Hansel thought of the seven brothers.
"I don't want to go home," he said. "Don't make me."
He suddenly felt like a very little child again.
"I understand," Johannes said.
"No, you don't." Johannes sighed.
"Hansel, I do."
And then he began to tell the boy a story. It started with a dying king and a young prince and a beautiful princess who lived across the sea. The prince became a king, and he convinced the beautiful princess to be his wife. Johannes left out the whole stealing thing, for his strength was low, and besides, it was pretty embarrassing. Then he told of three ravens and three prophecies, and a faithful servant who risked his very life.
"I loved this young king and his bride," Johannes said, "and I thought perhaps that they would keep their faith with me, that they would understand."
And he told Hansel of the chestnut stallion and the golden dress and the wedding dance, and of carrying the new queen to the highest turret, and what he did there, and of the pyre and all the rest. Hansel stared at the grass as the shadows grew and the sky turned from pale blue to orange and pink. Locusts hum.
"Can you ever forgive them?" Hansel asked softly.
"I did better than forgive them," Johannes said.
"I understood them."
"I understand, too, but
not in the new sense of the word," Johannes interrupted. "In the old sense, the ancient sense, I understood."
He paused and collected his breath.
"I planted my feet beneath them and took upon my shoulders their burden. Their choice, their mistake, and their pain. Yes, I understood them, but I also understood them. In the last moment, before I turned to stone, your parents understood what I had done for them. But only in that terrible day when they cut off your heads did they understand me. Only on that day were they willing to stand beneath me and take on my burden. It was that that brought me back to life. So I understand you, Hansel. And I understand you. But that, unfortunately, isn't good enough. It's not for me that you need understanding."
Suddenly, a terrible fit of coughing took the ancient man. He doubled up, and Hansel held him by the shoulders. After a while, he was able to lie back down. There was blood on his lips and on his face.
"Listen to me now, Hansel."
"Listen well." Johannes' voice was low and hard to hear. Hansel put his head right up by Johannes' mouth, much as Johannes had done for Hansel's grandfather many years before.
"There is an evil thing," Johannes said. "An evil thing in the kingdom. Because of their weakness and their sadness, a dragon has come to the kingdom of Grimm."
Hansel tried to sit up, but the old man's grip was iron on his sleeve.
"Listen to me. The dragon has taken possession of one of the people. It lives inside him like a disease."
"Who?" But Johannes motioned for him to be quiet. Speaking was now a great struggle.
"You must kill it, you and Gretel."
"Why us?"
"Because there is a time when a kingdom needs its children," Johannes said.
Hansel sat quietly under the pink and purpling sky. He thought of the kingdom and his parents, and of the years that had passed. He thought of the pain he felt, the heavy burden of pain. He thought of what Johannes had said about understanding.
"We'll go to them," Hansel said. "I'll find Gretel, and we will save our parents and their kingdom."
The old man smiled. He reached out and took Hansel's hand. They sat together as the light faded, and the sky went from blue to deep purple to black. Hansel stared up at the stars as they winked into being. 1, 2, 3, 4. He turned back to Johannes. The old man's eyes stared upward, but he was not seeing. Hansel waved a hand before his face and then touched his neck. Johannes was dead.